This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Pettersson chases Anderson down on the forecheck. They'll battle for it right corner. Puck is sent up the boards. Garland gets it free to Hughes. Left circle, Miller to the back door. Pettersson scores! Broken up by Huberdeau, but he can't clear. Suter, down low to Miller. Tries a pass back to the line. It's tipped to Brännström, left point. He'll rim it around the zone, and Miller gets it on the right wing half boards. Canucks are changing. Miller to Suter in the slot. He scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Anderson chased behind his own goal by keeper Sherwood. Gave it away to Pettersson on the left wing. Pettersson delaying near circle. Throws a saucer pass to the line for DeBrusque off the bench. Jake DeBrusque back to Pettersson. Now to the line. Brännström scores!
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks defeat the Calgary Flames 3-1 on home ice, bouncing back from a tough loss against the Edmonton Oilers, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Vic Nizar. We are going to welcome in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. And as always, get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Elias Pettersson this season and his struggles. Was just named the first star in the game here tonight. Ends up getting a goal and an assist, 2 points on the evening, helping the Canucks here tonight to the 3-1 victory. And, you know, Randy, there's a lot of talk about tonight's game, and it's the Calgary Flames, who are in a playoff spot heading into tonight. Of course, they were a top three team in the Pacific Division. They've gotten off to a good start. They're playing a third game in 4 nights. It's an opponent the Canucks should beat. They took care of business. We're hearing Pettersson speak right now to Olivia McDonald after the game, being named the first star. I wouldn't say this is the Pettersson is back game, but he was the Canucks' best player tonight.
Yeah, one goal, one assist, as you mentioned, but all over the ice. We had, you know what, he had four block shots, three hits, is able to, and there was one play where he took Pospisil to the, basically dropped his shoulder and made an aggressive move to the inside, identifying, hey, this is not a defenseman. That was the moment you're saying, that's a confident Elias Pettersson. The goal and the assist, all of that is great, but the ability to understand to say, hey, I have my moment, I'm going to drop this shoulder, I'm going to make a power move.
Yeah.
That was the moment to me, I'm saying, all right, I think he's, I'm not going to say he's back, because you need to bring that consistency, right, when we talk about sample size, but very confident, and you saw it in that play. I thought a strong, strong game today, guys.
There were multiple signals throughout the game, not just the goal, not just an assist, even the play where he takes a difficult pass through the neutral zone, holds off Pospisil, yep, gets a shot off Ladar's mask and knocks the mask off. And there are just signs that just far more encouraging than what we saw in the earlier season, going back to last season. Even the three-game point streak, these two games, far better from Pettersson than that three-game point streak. And, you know, we've sat here at multiple moments saying it's going to be hard to say the game specifically after viewing, say, oh, okay, now he's back. It's going to take 10, 15, 20 games. But these are far more encouraging signs, and the types of signs that feel more sustainable.
Well, even the goal he scored, he's the one who initiates the forecheck and kind of starts that, brings the pressure. So the finish is great.
JT from a standing position, right? Like, he's the one that tips in the puck, and he's the one that gets in on the forecheck to slow down the retrieval.
Exactly, and that's what you want to see, where it's that complete game. Before, you're saying, all right, he's doing all the right things, but the finish isn't there. Now you've got this player that's bringing the effort, bringing the edge. There was a couple of moments where, you know, I think he drilled Tyson Barrie, if I'm not mistaken, with a reverse hit. You're just seeing it in every aspect of the game, which is great to see.
Yeah, and I think when you watch him be so much more engaged and see him really take control of the game the way he has, he's been attacking space a lot better. He was excellent defensively tonight. You guys mentioned that too. And he made a lot of great subtle plays that we used to be, you know, be not amazed by with Pettersson, but talk about the maturity in his game. Like, there was, for instance, there was one play in the first period where Quinn Hughes misplays a puck behind the net. And I think it's Coleman. He has a kind of beeline towards him. So what does he do? He sees Coleman coming, so he kind of skates in front of him just to kind of obstruct him a little bit. Allows Quinn to rehandle the puck and just wheel out. And if you're not aware of your surroundings, that guy has an inside lane, goes straight to the puck carrier. He ends up hemming him in. And just little subtle things that, to me, don't show he's quote-unquote back, so to speak, but a guy who's so much more involved in every facet of the game. We talk about guys that I like to call matrix players, so to speak, who are just so aware of their entire surroundings and they're in control. And that's kind of what we saw here tonight on a lot of subtle little plays. And that's when I kind of know Pettersson's finding his game, where he's doing all these other things that connect play really well and also takes away opportunities that you don't quite notice right away.
The game's really slowing down for him. You can see he's ahead of the play. He understands what's happening, and, you know, that kind of that subtle pick play. He gets called on one as well, which is you'll take it, right? If you're ahead of the play, you're trying to get that competitive edge. You love to see that. And, you know, I think with Elias Pettersson, you're seeing this guy now also be ahead of – he's not reacting. He's not thinking about – it's a confident player that's saying, hey, you know, when I'm ready to go, when I'm skating, and that's the key as well, where he's skating, he's moving really fast now, whether it's through the neutral zone or on the forecheck. And like I said, it's the production is there, which is nice, but his 200-foot game is there.
100%. And it's one of those things, Vic, too. It's a game tonight that you could talk about Pettersson. I thought he was a Canucks' best player. Kevin from Calgary says it's Quinn Hughes. He's always their best player. But it's one of those nights where there weren't a lot of guys you could single out and say, this guy did not have a good performance here tonight.
Yeah, in the second period as well. Yeah. JT Miller and the plays that he makes, the two primary assists early on in that second period, he was kind of dictating the pace of that game. And I think that's where another player, Erik Brännström, had a heck of a game today. So there are a number of players that were playing fantastic.
All right, let's go outside the Canucks locker room, where we're joined by Jonathan Lekkerimäki, the Canucks rookie, played his first game in the regular season tonight. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. How much fun was that, man, getting a chance to play your first NHL game in the regular season?
It was nervous at the beginning, but feel better at the during the game.
How did you find the pace of the game compared to the AHL level?
It's a bit faster. Everyone is so good at this level, so just play smart and play simple.
Was there anything a teammate said to you in the lead up to the game that gave you a bit of confidence or calmed any nerves?
Yeah, just enjoy it, and I'm here for a reason, so that was good to hear. So.
Who was it that said that?
almost everyone.
Well, and how good was it? Your first couple shifts, you got to handle the puck through the neutral zone, get your feet moving. Was it a good way to kind of get into the game to allow you to play the way you want?
Yeah, I want to play with the puck, so get the pucks early and keep it going.
Well, we got a couple of looks at your parents in the crowd tonight. Did you have a chance to kind of see them during the game? I know you're trying to focus on the game, but did you look up and try to find them?
Yeah, I saw them at the first time, so it was fun to see.
This evening, you get put up in a position with JT and Piyu Suter, and you see multiple opportunities. Suter ends up scoring. Do you take anything away immediately, just trying to learn the first NHL game? I know it's right after the game, just in general, though. What do you take away from the experience?
I think I can play at this level. Get comfortable and play my game, and just have confidence to do it.
Well, and I think, you talk about confidence, and for any player, especially young players, it's always hard to build that up. And we all know in your draft, the first year after you were drafted, you had a tough year, had injuries, got sick. And how good does it feel to kind of go through those challenges, to come out the other side of it, and now be in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, it's sometimes it goes up and sometimes down, so just try to stay focused and work hard every day to get better.
Well, we saw your solo lap. I always try to ask players what's going through their mind. It's still fresh for you. What were you thinking about that in that moment?
Oh, I had a blackout. I was trying to not fall, so just take it easy.
Hey, Jonathan, listen, man, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck the rest of this homestand. Good seeing you in the NHL.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You got it. That is Jonathan Lekkerimäki tonight playing his first National Hockey League game. And he doesn't factor in on the goal scoring in the first goal because he was on the ice, but he did find himself on the first unit power play. We kind of were wondering about that. And during practice, we did not see him on the first unit. Now, and we'll hear from the coach later. I don't know how much of that was this is what we wanted to do or just kind of a hunch for the coach, but he made a couple of good plays. And, him on that forecheck where, if he doesn't make that play along the boards and kind of chips a body and gets in there, Pettersson doesn't close that puck down.
I think that was the most impressive part of his game for me tonight. We're going to focus on the shot because that's what he does. But
yeah,
his puck pursuit, guys, mm-hmm. whether it was in the neutral zone or in the attacking zone, he was on it. He's a player that, does not, kind of glide back into his own zone, or he plays hard, and that's where in 14 minutes in his debut, that's very impressive. Of course, you're getting a chance to play alongside JT Miller, but if you can't cut it, the coach is not afraid of cutting back that ice time. We've seen it in the past. This was a player that was confident. This was a guy that was finding that soft area, and you knew the guys wanted it to him to get that empty net goal, right? There he was out on that second-to-last shift of the game where JT Miller's trying to set him up basically for this final period. It doesn't happen, but I think Lekkerimäki can be very, very proud of the game he played, and he's going to build from here, right? Depending on – we'll see how long he stays up and how long he's with the team, but I think this is a great starting point.
And even the you know, lapses or miscues – were ones that were ambitious, mm-hmm. right? It'd be one thing if you don't look like you know what you're doing and you just kind of get frozen and suddenly play kind of goes around you and you get lost. Like there was a moment in the first period where Lomberg ends up with an open slot shot.
Yeah.
And it's from space Lekkerimäki vacates, but he's going to go make a play in the corner to try to close down the puck. You know, he just mishandles a pass on the backhand that leads to a Uyghur chance. But it's ambitious spots. It's being in the right spot to make the play. So certainly, like, everything that he didn't look out of place in the least tonight.
Honestly, my biggest question for him is going to be just the consistency of handling the rigors of playing in the National Hockey League. We know he's slight. You know, the wear and tear of doing those things. The confidence is there. The skills are there. He's a smart player. It's just how do you handle the pressure and the grind of an NHL season. And, you know, he's coming in to join the Canucks just as their schedule is getting tough, too. They have a lot of games in a short amount of time. They have back-to-backs coming up. That, to me, is going to be the biggest test for the kid.
Well, I did ask Rick talking about the biggest challenge for Lekkerimäki coming to the NHL level, and his point was, hey, consistency. It's great if you do it once. You've got that adrenaline. We've seen that with other young players as well. You play a great first game, but the second time around, can you match it, right?
Well, consistency plus... can you bring an upside to the top six?
Sure, yeah.
You need to a certain level of baseline of consistency just in general, your general play. And we've seen that from, you know, a PDG, a Baines, who's jumped up there at times in the top six. But do you provide another element, another layer to pushing the ceiling of a line? And it was evident in moments here today that, you know, he does find space. He does know how to get to interesting areas. And if this sustains here over the course of, you know, 4 or 5 games, does that chemistry start to build? Because the opportunities will be there with JT Miller.
Well, it was that opening play where he sees the space and he attacks it.
Yeah.
And not only that, then there's a middle drive right after that where, to your point, it's not a deer in headlights player. This is a guy that is in a position to make a play, and he attacks that space, right?
The play where he works around Huberdeau and has that middle drive, look, it'd be easy for a lot of players to say, okay, I'm going to chip it in and I'll be the one to go retrieve it. And we see that from a lot of players, and it's a safe play. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's what I mean when we talk about trying to search for the ceiling of a play. He's got the confidence and the ability to want to go pass it to Suter, and I'll go be the one to chase down to the post. And look, it doesn't happen. It doesn't come off in this moment because the angle's a bit weird. But nevertheless, like that's how a creative offensive player is going to think about it, rather than don't make a mistake here and I'll just get it in deep.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing you want to see from a player. He has the brain, right?
Yeah.
And it's very exciting, but at the same time, we're talking about a 20-year-old kid, first taste of National Hockey League action. There may be some ups and downs. He may not stick, you know, this entire time, but there's a lot to be excited about. And one thing I would always remind people, because we saw Pedersen explode onto the scene as a rookie, Besser explode onto the scene as a rookie, even Quinn Hughes. And then you saw the next year or the year afterwards, the guys went through some ups and downs.
Sure.
So it's not always linear, and no matter how talented a kid is, there's so many growing pains through the first few years, and he's at the very, very start of his career. There's a lot to be excited about, but you know, also don't be shocked and don't get down if you know he has some moments where it gets tough, where he has to kind of rectify and find his game. Every single Canucks player, even the greatest ones they've had, you see the struggles they've gone through the first few years at times.
Yeah, and this is an organization now that made the playoffs last year, won a playoff round.
Yeah.
It's not the same expectation from young players where there was not much going on with the team, so the young players got, you know, almost free entry into the lineup. You got to work your way. You got to earn your way into that. And I would say with Lekkerimäki as well, whether this is a one-game start, whether it's a five-game start, whether he sticks around for 2 months, we don't know that. But the fact of the matter is, now he's got, like, he knows the standard. Even in our conversation with him, he was saying, yeah, it's faster than the AHL. It's faster than I thought it would be, right? Like, there you go. That's the starting point for him. And if he plays in the AHL the next game, or if he sticks around for a couple of games, now the player knows, all right, that's the level I need to meet.
Especially, you know, one thing I came into tonight I wanted to compare it to was Daniel Sprong, right? Just because, like, that was a veteran that was kind of limiting the opportunity. And, that guy's put up 40-point seasons, right? He's had a successful NHL career. It's just, is that the bar you got to clear? And at the baseline, I see a very credible impression. Like, at the baseline, you can play in a spot where you can be a mercenary-type player. It might not be what's best for his development, but at the baseline, like, he again, it's one game, it's 14 minutes, and I'm sure the adrenaline's running for him on his first NHL game. But like that looks like an NHLer.
Yeah, it really does. Now, Randeep, before we let you go here tonight, there's a lot of players to talk about. Somebody texted in and said it was interesting you guys said Pettersson was the best player because I thought JT was, and he was very aggressive. And JT was very honest about his performance against Edmonton, called it a bad performance. And even Rick Tocchet said he's not worried about JT, but it was the worst game he's played so far this year. That was more vintage JT tonight.
Totally it was. And I think both of those plays that you saw where he got the primary assist at the beginning of the second period, right? I loved, and that was like a road hockey style power play goal where you take what the PK is giving you. And if you're going back and watching that on film, I think the Canucks will be happy with that one, especially because it's not one that's set up. It's you're pulling that PK apart, and JT's quick decision making sets up Pettersson. But the one later on, he doesn't rush the play. There's a lot of players that might be in JT's spot on the right half wall that there's a play developing in front of them, or maybe there's not much support, and they might just try to throw the puck somewhere. He waits. He pulls three Calgary Flames towards him, and that opens up the lane for Pugh Suter. That's an intelligent play to say, all right, if you're going to be slow to move to me, don't worry. I'm going to wait. I'll wait you out. Soft hands to make that pass. Those two plays, very different. One was very quick decision-making. The other one sees the play develop in front of him and just picks them apart. I thought JT, in terms of best player on the ice, you can debate whether that was Pettersson and Miller. I'm willing to hear it. But I thought that was a cerebral second period from him especially.
Yeah, the Suter goal is hilarious because he's the only one in the zone.
Yep.
Oh, it's so funny. You put the photo out. It's like five Calgary Flames, Suter along the wall.
Branstrom whips it in, and he's like, all right, let's go off. And Darnay goes off with him, and Lekkomäki, young player, is like, all right, I'll go off too. And Suter, it looks like he's going to change. He's like, all right, JT's hanging on the puck. All right, I'll go back in. And as you mentioned, it's almost as if the 5-on-1 advantage to Calgary plays against them because three guys feel the urgency to go close on Miller. But this is the thing we talk about all the time too. If the player is facing the play and he's got the puck, this is the NHL, man. These guys are too good.
Yeah.
And that distance that they have to cover to close down on JT Miller, as you mentioned, well, if I got time, I'm going to use it. And let's see what mistake you create. And three guys rush JT, and suddenly a 5-on-1 turns onto a 1-on-2 for Pugh Suter. And, look, he gets a bit fortunate because the shot goes off Pahal's stick and redirects into the corner. But nevertheless, you create an opportunity based on your patience and just situational awareness.
But it's also like this is what the high-end players do. Yeah. When you're facing somebody with the puck, they have gravity because they force guys to come across for them. And if you have the patience to draw a guy out, all of a sudden an lane opens up.
We've seen that with Quinn Hughes a lot this year, right?
I mean, I was just going to say.
We saw it like four or five times tonight.
I understand. You know, Kevin from Calgary and others saying Quinn was the best player. And Quinn does all these things so well that it's so normalized. Oh, yeah, just walk in the blue line, dummying somebody. Oh, well, go ho-hum. Because he does it like 10 times every single game.
Norm for us,
So, you know, that's still a very fair point. Randeep, great stuff, man. Fantastic as always. We look forward to chatting with you on Thursday.
Awesome. And I do want to give a shout-out to Erik Brännström. I thought he played a fantastic game. He was also physical at the end there, too. But, boys, have a good night, and I'll see you guys on Thursday.
I love it. That is Randeep Janda calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor, a 3-1 Canucks win over the Flames. And that is the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. All right, keep your thoughts coming in to our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Before we get to the phone boards, Bick, what is happening on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox?
650-650. A lot of love coming in from for a lot of different players. This one from Jason in YEG. Is that Edmonton?
That's
Edmonton. This one says, more like the efforts that we saw in California, better look defensively. Still have to make a deal to upgrade the defense as a whole, but forward group will be fine when our injured players come back. KG says, Canucks top in the Pacific Division based on win percentage. Pettersson playing Selke-level defense, and his offensive confidence is coming. JT with a big bounce-back game.
Yeah, this is a good performance from JT Miller here tonight. And, you know, when he asserts himself the way he does, he is a force to be reckoned with. And, yeah, not a lot of Canucks you can point to tonight and say they weren't good enough. But we'll get to more of your text messages coming up in a moment. Let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650. And let's go to Vancouver, where we have Rachel on the line. Rachel, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight after a 3-1 Canucks win?
Hey, so first things first, I'm a first-time caller. Very excited to be here today.
Awesome.
Rookie lap.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that Sat looked dapper on the broadcast. It was quite a sharp suit.
Oh, thank you. I'll take the compliment. And
obviously, I felt like the effort from PD looked really promising, and back-to-back multi-point games is really, really good. Obviously, we want to see this carry through for the rest of the season, but it's just nice to see him get a win and a couple of points on his birthday. And in terms of Flicker and Mackey's debut, I felt like there were a couple of moments there, a couple of shifts that were quite electric, and they looked quite dangerous with him and Miller and Suter. I know you guys have already talked a bit about his performance tonight, but can we expect to see maybe more of him when Besser comes back? Like, where do you guys see him in the lineup? All right.
Hey, Rachel, great phone call. For first call, please call in again. And not just because of the compliment. That was, you know, really, really good thoughts. I really appreciate it. It was fantastic. But, you know, as far as, you know, what to do in the lineup when guys get healthy, and she's right. You can't get ahead of yourself mm-hmm. too much. But this is something somebody was texting us before the show and said, if Lekker and Mackey can actually stick and Suter can do his own thing, then I think that's I think that puts the Canucks in a position where do you have enough answers for your forward group that you don't really need to be looking to make any real additions? Because if, right, if you look at it and say Heinen, Bluger, and Sherwood could be on the fourth line, and on the
third line,
you have like Suter with Garland and Joshua, which, I mean, could very well be, right? And then you have DeBrusque playing alongside Brock Besser and, or, you know, yeah, let's say DeBrusque, for instance, or even Hoglander playing there. And then you have Lekker Mackey with Pedersen. Like, you know, if that works out, like, you may not need to go out and address your forward needs at the trade deadline, but maybe you start looking at addressing those needs on the back end. And, you know, we'll see what happens here, but I can understand why it's tantalizing thinking about it.
Yeah, it's just a matter of everyone getting healthy. And, you know, that's always a ambitious effort. But right now, if Joshua is coming back on Thursday, you know, I'm hard-pressed to look at Jonathan Lekker Mackey to say he's the one that's got to come out. Nils Hoglander played 9:23 tonight. Arshdeep Bains played 10:19. Those two feel like far more likely candidates to come out. Atu Ratu 8:35 tonight as well.
Yeah, good performance from him. Let's continue on the phone boards, and let's go to New York where we have Bic on the line. Bic, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here after this 3-1 win tonight?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good, man. Yourself?
Good. I ran into Adnan today. Sat. He had great things to say about you.
Oh, man, he's too nice. No, that's
yeah.
Adnan. Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, he is. He's amazing. I was watching the game while I was turning a purchase agreement. Essentially, I'm just happy to see PD doing well again. I've been harping the same horn, essentially saying that, you know, these teams are not the greatest, but it's good to see that PD's going. In regards to, I think Rachel just brought it up about, Sat, you brought it up about who's coming out. I'm just kind of curious, what do you guys think is the best long-term plan with Hoglander? Do we keep him in? Do we trade him? Like, what's the play here? I kind of want to hear what you guys have to say about that. Have a good evening.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Bic. And it's not, you know, Bic Nazar calling in. It's actually Bic in New York.
I just want to point out how hilarious it is that the first two callers, one complimented you and the other one shares my name.
Yes, yeah, you know, it's not an inside job. I
so
promise.
Josh on line three.
Well, actually, looking at the phone board. No, we'll get back to the phone boards and your text messages coming up in a moment here and as the show goes on. But on the question of, what was it, who comes out of the lineup?
It was a question about Hoglander and what's best for his long-term development.
Well, I mean, the best thing for his long-term development is to stay in the lineup and keep working on his game and move up mm-hmm. the lineup. He has a three-year contract worth $3 million. That extension kicks in after this season, of course, right? So, yeah, the best thing is for him to play up the lineup and play well. But that's going to be the one to watch here because you start looking at guys getting healthy. And listen, we can talk about being healthy, and that could just mm-hmm. be an academic point because how often do teams have their full complement of 12 best forwards healthy at the same time? It's very few that happens. Even the healthiest teams don't have that many games where everybody's healthy to begin with. But like Hoglander is the guy who's probably going to be challenged the most when Joshua comes back. So I understand the question. And we know the coach has already shown that he doesn't always trust Hoglander. And I thought tonight he had some good moments, also some not-so-good moments. And I don't say he was bad.
He improved greatly because the first period, there was a couple of moments. I was like, dude, you got to skate.
Well,
like, you have to skate to get back into this
play. That there was that two-on-one chance where Lankinen made a great save in the first. It's him losing his guy in the neutral zone.
The three-on-two that Kuzmenko nearly converts, that's because Hoglander is staring at Ratu, who has to jump in on a loose puck, who's the top forward there, and Hoglander doesn't
activate to cover for him. And that puck gets poked away by Pospisil, and suddenly it's a 3-on-2 the other way. And you can even see the shoulder slump for Hoglund. It's like, I got to go all the way back here. And it's that moment that's like, you got to chase that one down. Even the goal against, I think Baines and Hoglander can be far more aggressive to get back into that play, and they just don't. And so suddenly it's an easy goal for Kirkland on a rebound that Hughes can probably do better with as well. That goal actually wind up being unassisted now because Hughes does possess the puck off the rebound. But it did improve a great deal as the game went on from Hoglander.
No, it did, right? But I think that's a very interesting thing to kind of watch as the season goes on here. And, you know, when another team doesn't want to trade Lekkomäki, and I don't think anybody wants to see him get traded at this point, right? And, you know, obviously Willander is a guy that's really high on their list. And if you want to get him, make big improvements, you have to give up something of significance. And I know what people are trying to get at here with Hoglander, but still very early in the season, a team absolutely believes in him. Look at the contract extension they did give him. But, you know, the coach doesn't make it easy for a lot of guys on this team either.
I would just mention, I brought this up on Friday on the People Show yesterday as well, and I chatted about with Yannick Hansen today, and he kind of, you know, shoot it away. But nevertheless, it does strike me as interesting now of some of the guys that have been weeded out through the Rick Tocchet tenure. Kuzmenko was one of them, right? You get an honest chance to try to do it, but ultimately, can you survive? Mikheyev won. Like, there's an opportunity there. Doesn't come off. We move on. Daniel Sprong, here's a project. Can you make it work? Project didn't last very long. And you go through the forwards right now, right? Like, Suter's on a expiring deal, but he's team-leading 6 goals. Garland's made these huge strides, and he's PKing. He's up to 18 minutes a night some nights, and it's been unreal from Connor Garland. Ends up playing 20.09 tonight. Jake DeBrusk is new. Brock Besser, look what he's done in the past 2 years. Kiefer Sherwood filling up the box score every single night, and tonight was a pretty light night, just 3 hits for Kiefer Sherwood.
But you go light on night, on. 3 hits.
Heinen is just doing subtle, awesome things. We were joking, he's the new Louis Erickson, but for like as a compliment.
Yeah, and
he's
like,
actually doing all the things that matter.
Good on the PK, great along the board. So many nice, subtle support plays he makes, and the thing I like about him too, like, yeah, he's not this overly physical player, but he gets in, along the walls. He's battles, but he gets the puck.
He wins the battles.
All I care about is getting the puck, and he does it in such an understated way. You're absolutely right about Danton Heinen.
Joshua, who's been the project player, and it's come off big time, and he's got 20-goal potential, and he had a great season last year. Now he's kind of trusted as one of the Tocchet guys. If you're kind of just looking for someone who doesn't really fit the mold right now, and sometimes it's difficult to see what the role is, and it's a great call to say, hey, like, what's going on here? It's 9 minutes tonight. You start playing it by default of who's going to take some of the focus of Rick Tocchet of being the next guy to say, like, hey, you've got to be the, like.
So the whipping boy, the only whipping boy remaining?
Sure. I'm just saying, like, by default, it actually might be Nils Hoglander.
No, I get it. And I mean, again, the ice time does speak for itself, right? I mean, you know, he's the only Canuck to know. Him and Ratu are the two Canucks
below 10 minutes
that play below 10. Baines just got over 10 at 10:19 here tonight. So it is what it is. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll take your phone calls on the other side, more of your reaction on the text inbox, plus we'll hear from the head coach, player reaction, and more analysis of this 3-1 Canucks win over the Calgary Flames here at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next on Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Vancouver wins the faceoff on the first man advantage of the night. Chance to tie the game. Quinn Hughes to center, leaves for Connor Garland. Try to pass through the middle, tipped off a stick in deep. Pettersson chases Anderson down on the forecheck. They'll battle for it right corner. Puck is sent up the boards. Garland gets it free to Hughes. Left circle, Miller to the back door. Pettersson scores! Elias Pettersson driving to the net, scores on the power play. It's his fourth point in the last 4 games, and the Canucks tie the game at 1.
Elias Pettersson gets on the board. Back-to-back games, back-to-back two-point performances for Elias Pettersson as the Canucks come back to beat the Calgary Flames 3-1 at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. And as always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. You heard the call coming in on Elias Pettersson scoring the goal here tonight. And I know there is still some hesitancy, and even, you know, myself, I'm hesitant to say Pettersson is quote-unquote back, but he's looking a lot more like the player we know he can be. And I know it's the Calgary Flames, right? And it's only a couple games, but it's the all-around game that's coming together. Yeah. And I think when we see those things, it's good markers that we're seeing here. And of course, for a guy who got the big contract and we're looking to take a step, it's not just about having a few good games. It's about elevating and really taking this team to another level. Have to give some time for that to happen, but it looks like the player is getting back to what he is.
The thing we always want from the star-level players on any team is, does it look like they can independently control the game and independently create scoring chances for themselves and also their line mates? And so if we view it through that lens of, hey, can you do it independently? To me, as much as it is the Calgary Flames, can you just look like you're a threat on the ice at all times? And I view some of these players as if they can put the thumb on the scale of winning. And tonight was a game that you look at, Elias Pettersson was central to a lot that happened in, as far as chance creation. And the expected goals tonight, per natural stat trick, he had a 73% expected goal share. And that's a sort of influence that top-level players can have. And it's looked far more similar to what we've seen in seasons past for Elias Pettersson tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're getting a lot of reaction on who fans think had the best game or they were most impressed by, and a number of players. And somebody that we haven't given a lot of credit to, because we haven't seen a lot of great performances yet, is Vinny Desharnais. And a couple of text messages. This one here says, really want to give 73 his props tonight. Had an excellent first period and helped set the tone. And this one here says, Brännström and Desharnais were by far the Canucks' two best defensemen on the ice tonight. Footworking is magic. Desharnais with a 95% expected goals share at 5v5, according to MoneyPuck. Never thought I'd see that, as one unsigned text. So people giving lots of love to Brännström and Desharnais. I'm always a little leery of some of those stats when it comes to a third pair, because they get more sheltered minutes, and we're talking about the Flames here tonight too. They're playing their second of a back-to-back. So I would be very careful in using that to say they were the best players on the back end. But I totally understand, because Brännström, I thought, not only was
he was
good,
really,
but like Randeep said, physically too, right? And he made that play where they got caught in their own zone, where he laid down and blocked the pass. That would have been a sure tap-in goal if he doesn't make that defensive play. So I thought he had an overall very strong game. What we need to see as time goes on is tougher opposition. You saw with Desharnais the other night against Edmonton. That's where he ran into trouble. But considering how much they struggled, especially Desharnais, I think the texters are completely right in shouting him out, because I did think Desharnais had a far better game tonight.
I still think Hughes Hronek were probably the two best.
I would agree.
But nevertheless, those guys deserve their praise tonight. And in the context of these 60 minutes, they featured, right? And Desharnais unlucky to not get the goal on that Heinen slashing penalty, which was a penalty. The stick breaks. There's nothing you can do about that. It's not a subjective call. But in general, they looked far more fluid and connected to the overall play. Nothing felt delayed and labored. Mm-hmm. Certainly nothing ever really is for Eric Brännström on the puck, right? He's a thoughtful decision maker and able to inject some urgency into the game with his mobility or just natural passing ability. But Desharnais today, I'm trying to think. I don't think there was anything overwhelming as far as like a giveaway.
No, I mean,
honestly, his worst pass was the one on the goal, because it went right into Bluger's skates, came right back to him.
And it obviously doesn't count, because Who got the penalty for slashing?
Heinen.
Was Heinen got the penalty for slashing. I mean, he broke the stick, right? So,
yeah.
But it was too bad for Desharnais, who was robbed of the goal. But, yeah, that was probably his worst play, and it still worked out for him, although
he was credited with two giveaways, but I'm hard-pressed to...
I mean, you got to rewatch. It could have been something along the boards, right, when you're trying to chip a puck out or something. Nobody plays a fully clean game usually, right? But it was far better for him. And like this text here says, unsigned, Vinny had great positioning the majority of the night, and that's something the head coach was talking about against Edmonton, where a lot of guys were puck watching, especially in their own zone, in front of their own net. And tonight, guys were taking players, right? And I did not like some of the stuff that the Canucks did as far as chances they gave up in the first couple rush chances. You know, Hughes had a couple moments with the puck where he kind of one time lost it and he bailed himself out, and the next time there was another bailout by one of his teammates. So not the cleanest as far as some of their play in their own zone and some of the rush chances, but I thought they were far better in boxing out and playing positional defense tonight, and I think that's a really good shout on the text inbox. Anything else you want to hit here before we go to the phone boards, Bick?
Yeah, plenty. 650. This one, because we mentioned little things, Louis and Danton Heinen has been doing some things that we've liked that are just subtle. Mike and Twasson, helping things Heine.
Well, healthy things, Heine.
Jokes per 60.
Doing the Heine things?
No comment. This one, Tendi Tyler. Stat dressing sharp is underrated, but that is because it's like Hughes. We just expect him to look good. Hashtag Riz.
Well, I mean, if you're going to read that, you have to read Renfrew Marco, who says, I did not find Sat dapper at all, my man. I'm sorry.
Dappy Arshaw.
So, there, I mean, it's not a consensus. I don't want to create just propaganda here. Not everybody is impressed by the
team. All right, I'll read some serious texts here. I just want to get some of those in. Tyson from Toronto, best game of PD season as well. Miller driving play. Knight's great team win. 650. Bungalow Jim. Petey was just a fight away from his Gordie Howe hat trick, but couldn't make it happen. Gordie Howe hat trick on your birthday. I'd have to research that, see if that's ever been done.
I'm sure it's been done, yeah. But, you know, it's
pretty strong.
Know. I'm not sure that's a Petey thing.
Gurdeep, Pedersen to all teams. Knock, knock. Teams, who is there? Pedersen is back, baby. Watch out.
All right. Knock, knock jokes. That's
I don't know if that one translated as well on air.
Well, you know Canucks fans are feeling it when they make knock, knock jokes about Pedersen being back, right? So, you know, a 3-1 win over the Calgary Flames. It's funny what a couple of points and what a win will do
for
the vibes, right? All right, keep your thoughts coming back, coming to the text inbox. We'll get to more of them as the show goes on here. But let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650. And let's go to Lethbridge, where we have Miles online. Miles, good hearing from you again, man. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey boys, thanks for having me back. Yeah, I like all the points you guys have made on Pedersen. I thought he was really strong on the body tonight, which is an underrated aspect of his game, his physicality. I just want to know what your guys' thoughts are on him being in the Selke conversation. I mean, I think all season long, he's been incredible in his own end. He had a couple of takeaways tonight. Now that his offense is finally back, where do you guys think he falls into the Selke conversation? I mean, I think he should have been in the Selke conversation in years prior, and I guess he was, but to the best of my memory, I don't think he was ever nominated. Adding to the defense, I thought Myers and Soucy played well tonight as well. Mm-hmm. They were strong, no real extreme errors from them. And I guess just, I didn't love the first period. I know, what night is it? Tuesday? I know a Tuesday night home game, it might be hard for the boys to be extremely motivated right from the get-go. And as the game progressed, they rounded out their game. Offensively, they were creating, but I really just fully believe that it starts with team defense playing together as a unit. So I thought the first period was sloppy with that. As the game progressed, it got much, much better. And I don't have access to the stats. I know you guys do, but I'm curious what the high danger scoring chances were for the Flames in the first compared to the second and third. Other than that, boys, thanks for having me on again. One last point. Hoglander, I really think he could be a solid trade chip for us, especially if Lekaramäki can pan out to something here. But yeah, thanks for having me, boys.
Hey, Miles.
Have a good night.
You too, man. Thanks for the phone call. That is Miles in Lethbridge calling in. And, you know, he's bang on about the first period because that was the most dangerous period for the Flames, Bick.
They had three high dangers per natural stat trick.
I actually think they had – well, actually, you know what? The Brännström doesn't count because the puck never goes across. And also the play Coronado had a wide-open goal.
That Quinn Hughes closed
doesn't count as a chance, right? Those are two more. So really five in the first period.
They wind up getting credited with one more the rest of the way. So
that's a good observation.
Good shout there by – Miles, and there was just rush gaps as well that led to some big chances for Calgary throughout that entire
first period. Yeah. What else did Miles touch on?
He touched on the one thing we'll hit and we'll move on is on Pedersen and the Selke. So Pedersen did receive he had
the last two seasons he's picked up votes, and I think he finished 7th or 12th.
So last year he finished 26th, the year prior he finished 7th.
There you go.
So he has, you know, been in the discussion to some degree with the Selke. It's also a reputation award to some degree where, for instance,
you almost have to build it up for years.
Yeah. So this year, as long as he's healthy, it looks like Moss and Matthews might get it because there's all this discussion about how good he's been as a two-way player.
I still think Barkov will get it.
I don't disagree. It could be Barkov. Barkov might get to a point now where he's just viewed as the guy, like Bergeron was, where he just, gets them. So I think we're a few years away from Pedersen ultimately winning one. But could this be the year by the end of it if he continues to play the way he is defensively, where he finishes top five in Selke voting? I think that's not out of the realm of reality. And I think as far as how he's played this year, it's been the best part of his game, the defensive side.
Yeah. Look, it's there for him, right? He can definitely be in the conversation. He's got that level of talent and awareness and the dedication and consideration to win on the defensive end. I just think there's some guys right now that, as you mentioned, reputationally are taking that. You know, we saw a guy come into this city and put up some offense and score some goals, Nico Hischier.
Yeah.
Like, he's having the type of season that feels like, okay, it's been building for some time, and there's someone that, is gaining some trust from Eastern voters as well to be in the Selke consideration. He's finished second. He's finished, I want to say, 15th before in a season. So maybe he's just a little bit ahead of the curve, but hey, put yourself in the conversation. Give yourself enough opportunities. Are you going to have a Pavel Datsyuk-like run at some point? Because that's the player he gets comped to a lot. Which, by the way, congratulations, Pavel Datsyuk, into the Hockey Hall of Fame as well yesterday.
Yeah.
It's in there. I just don't know if it's going to happen this year.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Sam texts in from West Van and says, Selke, how many goals again in how many games? Lekrimäki will have more points than Pedersen by Christmas. So a hot take there. 0 points for Lekrimäki through one game.
Is that Sam or Dan texting him?
It's not Reach. It's not Reach. But, yeah, it's Sam in West Van.
I was driving yesterday home from the office.
Did you almost drive off the road?
It was tough, man. It was tough.
Hey, I'm not going to bring it up. Yeah. You know, you did. Maybe somebody else will. But, hey, people are excited about him. You know, Pedersen has 4 goals in 14 games, which is like a 24-goal pace, which is, nowhere near where he needs to be. But he's up in the scoring a little bit. I would be very careful in assuming that his point production is going to be low, and we'll see that by the end of the season. We'll get to more of your text messages coming up in just a moment here. But let's take one more phone call, and let's go to Burnaby, where we have Gary on the line. Gary, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hi, fellas. I'd like to refer back to the Besser hit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Being an old man, I've watched hockey players for, 70 years get knocked out for a couple games, a couple weeks. Hell, I've even seen them get career-ending injuries. I don't understand. If the NHL wants to protect the best players, and instead of me paying $24 a seat like I used to when I had season tickets, it's a lot more than that now. To protect these good players, I don't know why they don't turn around and say, okay, you hit this guy is out for, maybe he's out for 5 or 7 games. The offending player sits for those 5 or 7 games. Then, when the player that got hurt comes back, then the offending player starts serving his suspension of 3 games.
You know, that's fair. That's a very fair point. Thanks for calling in, Gary. We always talk about how the NHL shouldn't make suspensions solely based on injury. Like, don't suspend the injury, suspend the action more than anything. But at the same time, it's hard to watch a player knock a guy out, and maybe he's out for a number of weeks, and a dude comes back in 2 or 3 games and he's playing. Meanwhile, the other guy is injured, going through whatever. The team is suffering through it as well. Like, you're taking the brunt of it. Sure, that guy got a 2-game suspension, but, you know, your team is taking the hit for it. And I don't mind that at all. Like, the guy is out as long as the other guy is out, and then after that, you serve your suspension. I don't think it's going to happen because the PA is probably not going to go for that.
I was just
going to
say.
That's what it is?
From a human element, I totally agree with everything Gary is saying.
From a judicial standpoint, totally makes sense.
Yes. The Players Association has to serve both sides of this, and obviously they want to protect their players and a Brock Besser, but they also want to get the playing opportunity for a Tanner Janot. It's not so much a league thing as the PA is going to be backing their guys. And it's a tough position to be in because, you know, a player's out. I get it.
Yeah.
They're just a legalese version to all this.
Yeah, there is. And those things do matter.
Oh, the lawyers. They
the
always,
lawyers,
get,
they always get in the way, man. They always get in the way. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. And we'll get to more of them coming up in a little bit. And we'll get to more of your phone calls as well. This one here says, they still can't beat playoff teams. Why are we happy? All caps. Listen, worrying about tomorrow, all it does is take away from today and doesn't solve anything in the future anyways. Like, I get it. They need to beat better teams.
Put a beat under that one.
I'm just saying, worrying about things that haven't happened yet, it doesn't matter. Like,
I was going to beat Pucks up for a second.
I'm just saying, like, we can talk about that, sure. But this is the post-game show after the Canucks beat the Calgary Flames. Okay? Again, you guys can text in whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. It's all fine. It's
we
all
read
good.
It.
I'm just saying, if you're sitting here stressing about that after the victory, you can live in the moment and worry about tomorrow. Okay, let's do that. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll take your phone calls on the other side. Plus, we'll hear from the head coach, Rick Tocchet, as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Shooter, down low to Miller. Tries a pass back to the line. It's tipped to Brännström, left point. He'll rim it around the zone, and Miller gets it on the right wing half boards. Canucks are changing. Miller to Shooter in the slot. He scores! Hugh Shooter cashes in after an extended offensive zone shift for the Canucks. They take their first lead of the night. It's 2-1.
Canucks go on to win, beating the Calgary Flames 3-1 on home ice. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Pew Suter, the game-winning goal for the Canucks tonight, and a great shift by the Miller, Lekkerimäki, and Suter line. They were buzzing. Both Suter and Lekkerimäki had two great chances to score. JT was all over the Flames in that shift and then sets up Suter to get the game-winning goal, and they go on to win 3-1. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox. 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Now, before we get to more of your reaction and more of our analysis, let's hear the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, let's start with your thoughts on your team's performance tonight, and in particular, the second period, where it seemed like you really swung the game in your favor.
Yeah, I obviously, I didn't mind the first. Obviously, being down 1-0, but I like the way we responded in the second. I thought we worked on some stuff the last couple of days at work tonight. A little bit more offensive movement with the D, more of a connection with the forwards. Played a little bit quicker. Thought we didn't give up much, and when we did, Lanx was there for us.
What stood out for you from Jonathan Lekkerimäki in his NHL debut?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot there to like. Smart player. You know, when he has the puck, there's not a lot of panic. You know, he's just going to get better. Goes to the right spots. You know, I thought he did a really nice job tonight for his first game. And there's a lot to build off. There's a lot of stuff to work with him. And but you can tell he's got some good poise in his game.
Rick, what was it about the second period, do you think, that made it, maybe arguably one of your best 20-minute stretches as a team this season?
Well, I thought we played a little bit faster and predictable. That helps this team when we play a little more predictable. We all know where the puck's going. Five guys, I think that helped. Saw a lot of more people getting inside, winning battles. That helps. Squashing plays, helps. All these things will help, but you want to do it every period. I know it's hard, but I felt that it was one shift after another. We got a little bit of a roll in it. It wasn't just one line and then two bad ones. I just thought there was a bit of a roll where you had succession of good shifts and good smart play, managing the game, taking zones, not trying to force everything. I think that helps.
Does it matter to you to get a bounce back effort like you got, especially in the second period, but all night long after the way your club performed over the weekend?
Yeah. I'm just going from since I've been here. We have usually a bad effort, and really it was the third period. Obviously, it was bad. It wasn't good. But I think when we have time as a group to get together and analyze it, most times these guys bounce back. I got to give them a lot of credit. Very rarely, you know, we put four or five duds together. I've yet to see it, knock on wood. But to me, that's credit to the team. You know, they and the new guys coming in, and you know, I thought last couple of days, I thought that not the practice before this, our first practice after the. Was a hard practice, and they wanted a hard practice. We skated at the end, and they could feel that they wanted a little bit of, not punishment, but they wanted to skate. I think that helps in this game. I really do.
Rick, something you wanted to see improve was the power player take on it tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it was some good stuff. I love that we beat pressure and Millsy right away to Petey. Like, there was no play. There's no, like, let's catch it, and that's the play. And, you want to see more of that, and you know, a couple of good chances, but yeah, we're going to build off it.
Did you like Ramacki on it as well?
Yeah, there's some spots there that it's almost like Besser like. You know, I think when Brock starts feeling better, I think he can help him out, work with him a little bit because there's some spots there that he knows where to go, and if you give him that shot, he's going to score.
And just with Petey, a goal on his birthday, of course, as well. But are you seeing his confidence build right now?
Yeah, I really do. He's working at his game. He's, you know, he's going on the ice a bit early. I think that's helping, and he's working hard, and that's the only way you get out of these things. He's starting to get his skating legs, and I think that's because he's skating hard in practice, and he's doing extra, and he has to continue to do it. Even if he's tired in a game, I told him, I don't care. We're looking for the long run with him, and I thought this week was a good week for him, and like the same thing, you know. Probably have a day off, but he'll probably come in and get a workout in. And that's the stuff that he's going to have to do, and it's starting to pay off for him.
Rick, you talked about your defenseman this couple days ago. You talked about your defenseman wanting to take the body a little bit more. You want to see that from them and let the goaltender find the puck. I know 4 minutes in, Quinn had a play like that. Tyler had a couple in the second. Do you think your defenseman did a good enough job just taking the body around the crease tonight?
Yeah, better. I mean, that's the whole game, being able to box people out. Or if there's scrambles taking people out, you know, we got to get better at it, and I thought tonight was a step in the right direction.
Kiefer Sherwood played a season high in ice time tonight, over 17 minutes. Obviously had the screen on Brännström's goal. Yeah. What has he given to your team?
Well, I think, you know, when you just the fact that he finishes checks is big for us. Sometimes it's not natural sometimes for our team to you got to go through people, and he's one of those guys that it's contagious. When you see him go out there, it usually helps the next line that goes out there. So obviously he's a guy that will take the body at all the time, and he's got some offensive capabilities too. He's got some points this year. He had a chance on that 2-on-1. That's what I like. It's just he's just not a guy that just hits all night. He can make plays.
And you showed confidence in going back to Kevin Lankinen tonight. Has a bounce back effort.
Yeah.
Just describe what that means to your group and the confidence it gives the team.
Yeah, he deserved to play. I don't care if he let 10 goals against Edmonton. He deserved to play tonight. And he's a battler. He battles hard. I mean, he played another good game. I mean, that's all he does is play good games for us. It's a credit to him. Really a fan of him because he stays in the moment.
Was that vintage JT tonight?
Yeah, Millsy had a good, really good game. You know, I thought Millsy and Petey, Teddy, I thought the centermen, all centermen were good tonight. You know, that's a big part of your team when you can have centers play a good game. But, yeah, when him and Petey play good, they both have really good games. It really makes a difference for us.
Going back to Lekker and Mackey, a lot of the talk is about his offensive game, but he performed really well in the defense zone, and you even had him out in the last 2 minutes with the empty net. What have you noticed about his defensive game since you've been working with him since training camp?
Yeah, I think I got to credit the Abbotsford Manny and those guys because they've been concentrated. Obviously, you got to let the guy be creative and do his thing. But I think play without the puck is something he wanted to work on. I think the Twins grabbed him last couple of days. That's helped. And I think Millsy today was really communicative on the bench with him. They talked a lot. I think that really calmed him down. That was great by Millsy and that line and Puse to help him out. When you communicate with a young guy all the time, it really helps. So I got to give those guys a lot of credit.
In the same vein, we've seen with Kuzmenko or even Daniel Sprong recently, you can have all the offensive skill in the world, but playing for this team while you're the head coach, you also have to you tend to have to hit a pretty high baseline level in terms of defensive play as a winger to get the minutes at the top of the lineup. Do you have to modify those expectations when you're working with a 20-year-old guy like Lekaramäki versus sort of what we've seen some other wingers go through?
Yeah, but it's one game for him. But I see, and I'm not talking to the other guys, but for him, there's a conscience there. Like you have to have, you want to press the envelope, you want to score, you want to be creative. But when there's times when you got to be in a spot for us, that's critical. You have to show a conscience. You got to have the conviction to be there. Like you know what I'm saying? If you're the reload guy, two guys dive in and you're not really reloading, you're kind of coming back slow. I have a tough time for those type of players. I don't care. You better score 60 goals. Like, that's just my rule. So you got to have a conscience. I think the kid has a conscience. You watch him play. He's going to make a mistake, but I think the difference with it, and I think they talk about it, he's obsessive about his game. I think he really wants to be obsessive with play without the puck. But I'm nuts. I want him to be creative, though. I want him to go. You know, I don't want him to, not looking to be the third guy back all the time. That's not what I'm looking for.
You get an interference call in the third period in your own defensive zone. It feels like there have been a few of those. I don't have the data yet, but anecdotally, it feels like there have been a few of those calls against your club. Have you heard anything from referees? Like, is that something they're cracking down on or trying to adjust teams away from this season?
Yeah, I think and Frederick, he's an awesome ref. Like, he'll come by the bench and he'll kind of warn, hey, guys, be careful here. I think they allow a certain amount of interference because, you can't just let people go by you, but there's that sweet spot. I don't see a trend, but, we do have to be careful of that if it becomes a trend. It's a good question, yeah.
Rick, you talked about the flow. You look at your team and the depth that you have. Is it to your advantage to play a game where there's a minimal amount of penalties because of that depth, and you can develop that flow in a game?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to, try to get the fourth line out a little bit. But, when you have a lot of penalties, our team, if we can get a four line, obviously PD and Mills are going to get their share of ice time. But if you can get that fourth line and, you can get them that 10, 12, 13 minutes like we did last year, get that fourth line going, it can really help your club in five-on-five play because you can wear the other team down. The flow of the game is big for our team.
Talk about Pettersson. You've always talked about the fact you like to see him move his feet. And that goal, I mean, he darts out of the corner, goes harder than that. Yeah. Is that something you want to see more of that type of aggressive play in terms of his skating?
Well, when you get rewarded when you're doing that stuff, it's he knows he's got to do it. And it's not that he, I always tell him, I don't want you to have to do it. I want you to want to do it because that's – And you can tell that he wants to do it. Like, he's just, even he's very attentive now. Like, he just seems like last week he's really kind of, enough's enough. And he's rolling up the sleeves, and that's what I want to see from him. And he has put some good efforts for us.
That is the Canucks head coach Rick talking at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. He's talked so much, Rick Tocchet, about Pettersson and practicing a certain way and fighting through. He said, I don't care if you're tired, you have to keep skating. And I think more than anything, it's a mentality thing he's trying to instill on Pettersson, right? It's, you're not going to feel 100%. You are going to be banged up. You got to fight through
it. It's life, dude.
If you're playing, you got to fight through it. If it's so bad you can't play, okay, different story. But if you're out there, you got to find a fight through it, And it's a mentality thing. And the stuff there at the end, and he went pretty in-depth into he's been practicing better, but him saying that there's a sense of enough is enough. And that's kind of what you wanted to see. And I'm not saying Pettersson is quote-unquote back, right? But it's two good games in a row. It's been incrementally getting better. Goes back to the road trip, right? Like, incrementally it's getting better and stronger, and he's seeing a real correlation with the moment where he just had enough. And that's kind of, we talk about you have to get yourself out of this, and we've been talking so much about, like, try him here, try him there, do this, do that. But it comes down to the individual at some point just hitting that juncture where they're like, come hell or high water, I got to do something different. I have to change this. And this seems like he got to that point, and we're starting to see him turn around.
And some of the rules and principles we talk about at times are general principles of
what do you do for the average person or the average player? That's not an average player, dude. That's not an average person. That's a dude who makes 11.6 and is supposed to be the driving force for why a team could ascend to high levels of competition. Third round, Stanley Cup final, win the cup, all that sort of stuff. So you can't coddle it. And I know that's harsh. And it goes beyond just like the criticisms we get for fans. It's how do you approach as the head coach how to deal with this player. Mm. And it's easy to just be like, all right, cool. You don't want to skate, don't want to skate. But that's a third line mentality.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit dismissive. But that's not a special player quality. The best players want to get pushed hard. The best players all get coached hard. And the best players understand that to reach a certain level, I have to do things differently. Right? Like there's a reason why we say there's a difference between good and great. You have to keep pushing. And it's an unfair burden to be putting on you, but such is the requirement when you're making that much money. Such is the requirement when you're going to be the leader of this team statistically and the driving force behind why this team is going to have success. That's kind of what you sign up for when you decide you want $11.6 million.
Yeah, 100%. And we know what Pettersson, everybody's different. Everybody has to be approached differently as far as getting the best out of them.
But at some point, the conclusion is still the same.
And that's the thing. Your message can be different, but nobody is going to be like, oh, it's okay, don't worry, don't work hard. You know, and I'm not saying Pettersson wasn't working hard, but when you are that level, there is something else you have to do. And what do all the players that end up winning talk about? How they had to push it even beyond what they thought was extreme preparation. And that's kind of what he's trying to get through. He's watched it with himself. He played with Mario. He won Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh. He's had a long career in the National Hockey League. He saw it with Sidney Crosby. He saw it with the Penguins when he was there as an assistant coach as well. Like, he knows the best of the best how they get there and how you become a Stanley Cup champion. And the Canucks believe in Pettersson because it just gave him the biggest contract in franchise history. And he's the right guy, I think, to push him beyond those boundaries.
The other part, too, and I don't think this has ever been said or anything like that, but like one of the reasons that it makes the most sense for coaches and management to take a hard line, say, no, you have to go do it. You have to go become this guy. Their jobs are on the line, man. Like, if they don't win, at some point, their jobs end. And the people that drive it the most are going to be the star players. So you shouldn't sacrifice your own standard to say, oh, look, dude, we believe you in so much, we'll let you do whatever. I wouldn't want that. If my job is relying on somebody else, I'm expecting them to hold up to a standard that they believe that player can reach. And that's the thing we've mentioned. You know, the players that have reached certain statistical markers, like 100 points, they're all like Hart winners, Stanley Cup winners, Stanley Cup finalists. It requires a consistent level of dedication, and it was always going to come back at some point. It's not fully back, I get it, but that speech there by Rick Tocchet just shows that it's possible for them, obviously, and they're seeing the first signs of it.
Yeah, and I mean, the confidence starts to grow as well when you start having results, and now 4 points in 2 games for Elias Pettersson. James in Qualicum Beach says, like Millsy said, there's only one way out, and it's to work, and PD has been putting in the work, so I am confident. And Hussein in Coquitlam says, scary how good this team looks when Pettersson and Miller are both rolling, and that's something that Tocchet spoke about as well when meeting with the media. This was the first game this season, Vic, we've seen JT and Pettersson both play good in a game together. We both say, like, these guys are, like, on point tonight.
Yeah that's
you
true.
Know, and it took 14 games to get there, and he spoke about how much that helps this team. And it wasn't perfect. Like, again, I didn't love the first period. There were a lot of chances. We spoke about that a bit earlier on the show. But overall, he liked a lot of what the Canucks did, especially in the second period. And, you know, we had that caller earlier, Miles, who made the point about, you know, the first period and then not giving up anything. Like, they barely gave anything up after the first period. You know, like, it was like what one high danger chance the rest of the way, I think
it was
the Calgary Flames, 5-on-5. Not really a lot, right? And he gave a lot of praise, Bick, to Jonathan Lekkerimäki. And the thing that kind of made us go, was you can work with Brock when Brock comes out to help him out. And you can look at this a few different ways. The big one for me, Bick, and I'll let you kind of go on here, is, oh, so he's going to be here when Brock comes back?
Yeah. Yeah, he says, I like the when asked about it, he was almost Besser-like for Lekkerimäki, and then Brock can help him out when he's back. And look, said a lot of good things about Lekkerimäki, and even went on to say that he's got a good conscience out there. You want guys to press the envelope, and when there's times, you have to be in a certain spot for us, and you have to show us that you can have conviction to be in there. And there were a couple of moments, especially in the first period, like right away, he jumped into the rail. And even in a moment you can see JT entered it, he almost waved JT away. He's like, I got it. I'm here. And that's that level of conviction. And there was a Uyghur chance, too, that he stepped into the rail, and the puck just goes off his back end. He doesn't corral it, but Uyghur gets his short side chance.
But he goes to the right spot.
He's in the right spots, and that's what Rick Tocchet was mentioning. It's, yeah, obviously there's a demand to and want that you go be the type of player you are who can be a shooter. He ends up with two shot attempts, I think, tonight, both of them ending up on goal. But you still have to go do the job. And, you know, that's why we reference when we're chatting with me, you, and Randeep. It's there have been guys like Baines and PDG or whoever has filled in on that line that they've done some defensive stuff, but the upside isn't there. Well, he's through one game of 14 minutes, you saw enough of both. And he didn't just try to play his own game and almost play scared. Just be like, I'm just going to do what I do. If the puck comes to me, I'm just going to wire it. And wherever I am, I'm going to take a shot. And he was thoughtful on the ice defensively and also contributed behind the goal line, like gets a good check on Kadri, forces a turnover, is popping up in moments, distributing the puck.
Yeah.
And look, that was really encouraging.
No, it really was. And, you know, the kid is fantastic and has a lot of ability. And we'll see how he plays as a lead, kind of takes notice if he keeps playing well and how he adjusts to it. But a very good start, his first game, impressed the head coach. What else stood out to you from Rick Tocchet? Or did you want to say something else?
No, I just wanted to read a text from Nick on Lekkerimäki. He just says, I liked it. He looked so much like he belonged off the hop and had no fear holding the puck, which is something you don't see guys for in their first game. So looking forward to what he brings. I think Rick Tocchet mentioned that he had a lot of poise on the puck as well.
He mentioned that. Yeah. He literally said he has some good poise. No panic, goes to the right spot, did a really good job, lots of build-up, has some really good poise in his game, was a direct quote from Rick Tocchet.
There you go. Outs from Rick Tocchet. I said he didn't mind the first. I'm a little surprised by
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, he said he didn't mind the first, but he liked how they responded in the second, and he kind of talked about how, you know, they did a lot of things better from that point on, didn't give up much, and that's exactly what happened. They gave up next to nothing, as we mentioned, outside of the first period. But he was happy. He talked about how they were more predictable and played a lot faster, which is something we wanted to see this team do, play a lot quicker, too, and getting inside and winning battles. And he really does credit Kiefer Sherwood as kind of being a driving force down the lineup for the team.
Yeah, he mentioned, too, how you know, that level of engagement becomes contagious. And he's got some offensive capabilities. He had that nice little dipsy doodle late in the, I think it was the third period, where he, you know, from the bench side wall, drags it to the inside and got a nice reaction from the crowd. And, yeah, there's something there, obviously, the offensive upside that you've mentioned. How many goals Kiefer Sherwood can score. But it's not
stuff
just
of legends,
that,
yes.
Yeah, it's not just someone that goes out and make hits. But just on whole, it mentioned that the lines were one shift after another, got on a bit of a roll. And you go to the Suter goal, like that gets set up 90 seconds before because it's a good shift from the Pettersson line. And Pettersson almost gets his second goal in quick succession. And, you know, Desharnais creates a chance, a point shot. Suter gets a direct redirect that Miller and Lekkerimäki are jamming away at, and it just continued, and there was a lot of rollover, shift to shift from the Canucks in the final 40.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know,
sorry, just to quickly illustrate that, the total possession time in the Canucks offensive zone, 14 minutes and 29 seconds versus 11:15 for the Flames. So you just see the disparity in how much the puck was in the Flames end.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And the Flames playing third game of four nights, back-to-backs, and obviously that was going to wane as the game went on, and they kind of threw their best punch in the first, and after that they really didn't have a lot left in the tank anyways. Curtin the George says, you're not going to see Pettersson back because he's evolving to the next level. That's Curtin and George. Talk about evolution in Elias Pettersson's game. All right, James in Qualicum Beach said likes the pass JT Miller made to Pettersson for the first goal of the game. We'll talk about how the goals were scored. We'll get to Ian McIntyre and more player reaction as the Canucks Central post-game show rolls on, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Anderson chased behind his own goal by Kiefer Sherwood. Gave it away to Pettersson on the left wing. Pettersson delaying near circle. Throws a saucer pass to the line for DeBrusk off the bench. Dave DeBrusk back to Pettersson. Now to the line. Branstrom scores! Eric Branstrom with a long-range wrister has his first as a Canuck. And it's 3-1 Vancouver.
That is the final score. Canucks beat the Calgary Flames 3-1 on home ice. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Seth Yershaw with Bick Nazar on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, Dunbar Lumber 650-650. We'll get to more of your reaction here as it goes on. And you heard the goal coming in. Eric Branstrom getting his first as a Vancouver Canuck, and the one that salts this one away in this text asks us, how much of a steal could Branstrom end up being for the Vancouver Canucks? And we spoke so much about how they needed another puck mover down their lineup, and obviously you would love to see them have add a top four, but even having somebody else as an option down your lineup that can move the puck. And we weren't sure what to expect. The Canucks acquired him from the Colorado Avalanche in the Tucker Poolman contract dump. They gave up a fourth round pick to make the deal happen. But what do? They end up getting the guy down in Abbotsford for a few games. He plays well. He comes up. And next thing you know, he's playing third pair of minutes and acquitting himself more than fine and giving the team an element down the lineup they haven't had, Bick.
Yeah, it's encouraging. I'd still love to see him and Forbert together again, obviously with the injury for Forbert.
It was a short spell.
It was one game.
Yeah, but Branstrom really struggled defensively playing the right side, and that's what worries me a little bit. But I know
but
what you mean.
But at some point, again, just as a general principle, I don't like guys losing their spot in the lineup due to injury. So Forbert comes back. Is he likely to be in ahead of Branstrom, also for PK duty and all that?
Yeah, I don't know if you can have that's a conundrum, because I don't think you can have Forbert, Desharnais, or Forbert with Juulsen. I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, so does it make more sense to go Forbert and Branstrom?
Yeah, and work on it and see how that goes, right? And, you know, as far as that goal was scored, let's break down the three goals the Canucks scored, and let's start on the one. And, you know, Pettersson ends up getting his second assist, and in that third period, Bick, I mean, he almost set up a couple of goals.
Yeah, should we start with the Pettersson goal?
Let's start with the Branstrom, because you heard the call coming in on the third goal. And that's the one Pettersson passes it to him, and the point shot goes through.
And you actually
it was a dangerous shift as that goal happened. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, I think we had a caller earlier or a text earlier just talking about Pettersson. Feels like he's reading the play better. You watch this whole play, and Sherwood obviously provides some pressure on Anderson to force him to retreat. But Pettersson's like already aware of it and already tracking towards the boards and doesn't get there early.
Mm-hmm.
He almost baits it. He's like, it's open if you want to rim it around. I'm going to get there, but it's open if you want to do it. And like, he's in there well in advance, and he cuts it off and, you know, hits DeBrusk as the trailer, and DeBrusk drops it back to him and hits the same pass this time to Branstrom. And it's a lot of credit to Kiefer Sherwood in front of the net, too. He doesn't get a point on this, but he creates the pressure on Anderson. He's in front of the net to screen Vladar, and they get the goal.
Yeah, and it was just nice for Branstrom to get that shot through, and kind of does find himself through a little bit of traffic, but you're right. I mean, it's just Pettersson being engaged, and a couple shifts leading up to that goal, he was very active as well. So a multi-point game, 2 points tonight, was very much earned. And going back to the goal that he scores, and, you know, we read the text from James talking about that incredible pass from JT Miller, and all he does is tip it in. But all this begins, Bick, on the entry, on chipping the puck in, and I know Lekker Mackey doesn't get a point here, but he does some good work along the boards, too.
With Garland as well.
Yeah.
But as Rick Tocchet mentioned, that he liked the power play. It's like, just make the play. Just go do it and whip it around the horn, and suddenly JT just hits a guy to Pettersson, who's presenting the entire target the whole way. He doesn't have a lot to do, but you got to get it right before that pass comes there, and he just presents a target, and JT, you know, rips a pass down low, and it's simple stuff when it goes off that quickly.
Yeah, it really is. And that was a 1-0 goal, Pettersson's second goal in his second game. And the Canucks kept things going. And, you know, the coach talked about how he liked Pettersson and JT's game tonight. And JT, well, he sets up the game-winning goal to Pugh Suter.
Yeah, a lot of good work on this, because it starts even well before. Pettersson has a nice shift and creates a chance, and they just keep the pressure on. Desharnais gets a shot off the back that goes off the backboards. You know, Suter tips it towards the net, and all sorts of chaos and zone time gets created off of that. And then – You know, there's actually a play here where Huberto has a chance to get it out of the zone, and Desharnais just kind of takes a swiping look at it and just forces the puck to stay in the zone. And it's JT, you know, on a rim around as guys are changing. It's 1v5.
Yeah.
And he just draws everyone towards the boards, and Suter kind of sneaks into a spot, gets a shot off, goes off Pahal's stick, and in, and they make it 2-1.
Yeah, and we mentioned the third goal. Brännström salt this one away, but Pew Suter, somebody was asking us, I'm sorry if I can't find your text message. I wanted to credit the person who was asking the question. It was said, Suter now has 6 goals already. It's Freddie and North and Dub, New West. Suter already has 6 goals. What do you think about a contract extension? I mean, if you're, it gets tight. Because the Canucks, if you want to sign Brock Besser,
sure,
too, Lankinen's playing well. The good problem would be the same one you had last year, which is unfortunate. You couldn't bring everybody back. But if he plays the way he's playing, Besser gets back and plays healthy, Lankinen plays well, well, there won't be enough cap space for all of them. So it will be some tough decisions to be made. But for Suter, and we talked about this before the game with Reach Pick, that the biggest opportunity with Besser out and also Dakota Joshua being out, and even when he comes back, it's going to be a gradual process for him to go up. In a contract year for Pew Suter, here's his chance to have a really big campaign and set himself up for, like, he's going to be 29 when he hits free agency, which is a great age, too, but it's the one chance he has here, right? And I wish him nothing but the best, whether it's here or elsewhere, but what an opportunity for him. He's making the most of it.
Yeah, I'm curious, though, because the market wasn't massive for him.
But it was also on two non-playoff teams. He's now played in the playoffs last year on a good team. You're seeing his versatility. He's getting, you know, a more of a national look as well.
But okay, so if I said the Dakota Joshua contract,
so
over or under?
I'd say under. So the
I would too. Yeah,
because the way I looked at it is, can he get a contract worth about $10 million in free agency for 3 to 4 years, or something along those lines? Right, like that's kind of what he might be looking at. And unfortunately, because of the Canucks cap situation, they may not be the ones that can give him that deal. But a terrific start to this campaign for him, of course, and hopefully he sets himself up for a great position.
I just don't think it's going to be an onerous number, but it's also going to be one that Canucks are they going to prioritize it?
Well, you have to start looking at it too as, not only are you paying him, you still have guys like Joshua who has to live up to that too, right? And you have Heinen for one more year, and you have Sherwood for a year afterwards. And how do you feel about wanting to keep him beyond that contract, depending on how he plays? You can't pay everybody, unfortunately. And the Canucks have players pushing, coming, right? So you need to also allow room for those guys. But, you know, to answer Freddie's question, he's putting himself in a really good position and could earn himself a solid contract this summer if he keeps this going. We mentioned Brännström, and Chris in Maple Ridge texted in and said, you guys see Pettersson's, he was happy on the bench, he was laughing tonight, and his reaction on the Brännström goal, he was happy for his fellow Swedish teammate. And, you know, as far as Brännström is concerned, he met with the media post-game as well. You saw his elation in scoring the goal. Fans are very excited with what he's brought to the team, and here is he is meeting with the media after a 3-1 win over the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, I think we played fast, stick to our game plan. I think we played a really good game, solid. And for my part, I think I played simple game, fast. And yeah, it was a good game for both the team and me. So,
what does it mean to you to get your first as a Canuck?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it's always fun to score, so yeah.
What about the screen Sherwood set for you?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't really see the puck, so it was great.
Eric, did it matter to you? Obviously, Saturday didn't go your way. There's the bounce off the stanchion and on. Does it matter to have a bounce-back performance like this tonight?
Yeah, of course. Of course, you give your best every night. Sometimes it's it doesn't go your way. But, it was fun to – always great to have a bounce-back game, yeah.
Why did it work so well for your club in the second period?
I think we – like I said, we stick to our – how we want to play, like, fast and, turn pucks and, get the – like deep and forecheck, so I think we did everything we wanted to. Yeah.
What were your impressions of Jonathan Lekkomäki in his first game?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Had a good chance on the power play there. He's a real skilled player, and it's fun for him to play his first game. And it's great to have him here.
He was chosen 15th overall, same as yourself. Is there anything you can tell him in handling the expectations?
Not really. Like, he's so skilled, really good player. So he's gonna be himself and play his game. I think he'll be really good. Yeah.
Played a good amount of games with Desharnais now as your partner. I'm curious, from your point of view, what's the best thing that he brings to the pairing with you?
He's size. I think he helps me like hold up guys. And I think, yeah, we talk a lot out there. He talks, yeah, really much. So, I mean, it's easy to play with him. And, yeah, I think we played well together. So it's fun.
It seems like he's trying to make you the primary puck mover out of your own zone. I'm curious, is that something that you kind of thrive in? Is that something you appreciate?
I mean, that's what I want to, like, contribute out there, my puck moving. And, yeah, I think, yeah, he makes me better, and I try to make him better too. So, I mean, it's been good so far, yeah.
Do you give a guy like Jonathan any advice on the day of their NHL debut, even if it's just go have fun?
Yeah, we walked together to the rink today. I mean, he just told him to have fun. It's only hockey. Like, I mean, he played so many games in his life. So, yeah, he did a good first game, and, yeah, just got to keep going.
You've
had a string of games here with the Canucks. Came in more known maybe for your offense than impressed with your defense. Can you describe your level of comfort with your new team?
Yeah, I think, like, yeah, they play, well, we play really fun hockey. I mean, I think it fits me very well. We want to have the puck and, yeah, play offense. And I think it's been great so far. And, yeah.
When defensemen talk about why their pair works, they often say, oh, yeah, we're always talking on the ice. Have you ever been partnered with a guy who talks too much?
Yeah, Vinny probably. Yeah.
What are you saying about me?
Talking too much. No, no, exactly. No. It's been really good, yeah.
That is Erik Brännström meeting with the media after a 3-1 Canucks win, getting his first goal as a Canuck tonight, and, you know, joking about Vinny Desharnais.
The jokes per 60.
The jokes
per
60,
Brännström.
Yeah. You know what? He sounds happy, of course. He scored a goal,
sure.
But you can tell he's a player who's also sensing the opportunity here, and he's playing well. He's getting a chance on a good team. This is the first time he's played on a good team. He signed with the Colorado Avalanche this offseason, and, you know, from my understanding was a lot of his hope was around the fact that they had a lot of injuries on the back end with the Colorado Avalanche, and he was going to get a chance to really, you know, show his game on a good team. And then later on in free agency, they signed Oliver Shillington.
Yeah.
And that fellow Swede, but obviously a guy with more pedigree and has a well-rounded game, has had some troubles, of course, the last couple of years, you know, on the mental side that he's worked on, and we're happy to see him back in the league. And he's obviously would be a better player than Brännström, signed for more money. And he kind of took a spot from him, and he never really felt like he got the chance in Colorado he had hoped for. And I think there was some, you know, bitterness that he ends up on waivers initially, and then the Canucks end up trading for him. And the fact that he's now on the team, I think there's an appreciation for kind of what happened, and the fact that he now feels like he can prove himself on a real, actual playoff contending team for once.
Yeah, and this is the claim from this management group, right? Their claim to fame in Pittsburgh was they just plugged and played some D-men, and it just didn't matter. Guys had success there, and they found a John Marino, they found a Marcus Pedersen, whatever it was, they targeted certain guys and they managed to make it work. And here's this one. You bring in Erik Brännström, and it's still audition phase. It's still, you know, growing, but there's really just been, you know, one game and maybe an odd moment or two in another one that haven't been clean. He's been he's shown every facet that he has. And playing to his strengths, and he's been afforded the opportunity to play to his strengths as well, and it's starting to flourish, and it's a great sign for Vancouver.
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully it's something that he can keep building on, and build and become even a more important player for this team, because we know they're going to be looking to add to the defense. We know he's not the biggest defenseman either. The Canucks already have Quinn Hughes, who's not the biggest guy, and they want their trees on the back end. So he has to overcome, I wouldn't call it bias necessarily, I think it's preference as far as how mm-hmm. they want their defense to be. He has to overcome that by providing so much value with his skill set, and that's moving the puck out efficiently, but it's also scoring and providing some points. And that, he doesn't need to have a ton of numbers, but he needs to have a bottom line here, and he has to give the Canucks an edge when he's out there playing, and that's what's going to justify him staying in the lineup long term.
Well, so far, he's doing exactly that. What is it now? 4 points in 11 games?
Yeah.
That's something.
especially for the minutes he's playing. Like, we're talking about he's averaging, what, 14 minutes a game or with the Canucks?
Just a hair over 14.
So it's not a lot of ice time here either, and that's a solid production for a guy playing down the lineup. And, you know, as far as the Canucks players tonight, like, we've been talking about how Elias Pettersson, you know, we thought he was the Canucks' best player tonight, and really back-to-back big performances from him, 4 points now in two games. Quinn Hughes was tremendous again, especially with how he handled the blue line, and, you know, we just normalize how great he is. JT Miller had a great game, but I don't think Branstrom was too far off the list of best performing Canucks tonight.
We got this text from Blue Line Bar Down, 650-650. Is Branstrom just a sugar-free Quinn Hughes or a diet Quinn Hughes? And he clarified that the sugar-free one is the better one.
Yeah, I'd say more sugar-free.
All right.
Right? Like, I mean, Quinn Hughes is Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not a fan of sugar-free versus diet. I think I'll prefer the diet drinks.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference, really?
I don't know, but that's why I asked for clarification. But just based on taste, I think I prefer the diet ones.
Based on that, definition, sure. This text simply says, Kevin Thankinen.
Oh, nice.
There you go. We see you working. All right. You know what? Enough of us. It's time to bring in the man we call the closer. He's a triple threat for a reason. You read him on digital. You watch him on TV tonight on the Away broadcast. And you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Yes, I'm back on the side of Sat instead of the side of Vic. Back on TV as opposed to not on TV. For 3 minutes in the second intermission.
Best minutes on television tonight.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. That sounded like a conversation I should be part of, the sugar-free. What were you guys talking about?
Someone asked us, 650-650, is Eric Branstrom, the way he's playing, is it a sugar-free version of Quinn Hughes or a diet version of Quinn Hughes? And in the context of this question, per the texter, sugar-free is the better of the two.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people prefer the diet stuff now than the regular stuff. I'd say Quinn Hughes is beer, and Eric Branstrom is light beer. Okay. That's what I would say.
All right. Fair enough. I think that works.
Or Cabernet versus Pinot Noir, like a little lighter. Anyways. He's playing well.
Yes.
How about that?
Yeah. He really is playing well.
I'm sorry I didn't add more to that conversation after I took you guys there. So.
No, it's all right. I mean, I don't think there's much else there to dive into, to be honest, but I'm glad we clarified it at the very least.
That's a very nice suit you have on, Seth.
Oh, thank you. It's the tie that makes
someone called in and said he was looking very dapper tonight. Oh. And it's been a theme throughout our text inbox.
Well, he's always dapper. Yeah. I mean, such a good-looking man.
No, that's. Thank you.
He's got a good body.
May he rest in peace.
He's got good girth, real body, legit.
Yeah. Dan D'Orazio, may he rest in peace. Oh. Yeah. What are the all-time quotes? Right?
Oh, fabulous! I did a story, and I love Dan D'Orazio. I got along with him well. You know, I covered the Lions for a lot of years as well when I was at the Vancouver Sun. And I remember doing a story about, this would be like 2 years after the fact, after he said the quote, doing a story with him about the quote. And, you know, it was great. And he was good about it. He was such an interesting fellow, coached the offensive lineman, and he looked like, you know, the water boy. He was about 140 or something. And he coached these giants, and the guys all loved him.
Yeah, I mean, massive personality.
O-line coaches are always a little quirky, too.
Yeah.
Most football coaches are a little quirky was my takeaway.
Yeah, you kind of have to be that, you know, obsessive about the game, essentially. But, you know, now, as far as what we saw tonight, you mentioned offense. And, you know, I think the Canucks against the Edmonton Oilers didn't really generate a lot of offense. Tonight, you know, maybe 3 goals was light considering the chances they had, but you'll take a victory.
Sure.
But a far better offensive approach that the coach talked about as far as attacking tonight and being a bit more aggressive and more connected with how they approach the game.
Yeah, I thought it was a great bounce back game. And, you know, that was one of their traits all last year. Remember, they didn't lose more than two in a row until February. And I think that was, did they lose four? I think four was their high.
Yeah.
And then they didn't lose more than two in a row again after that. I'm not a fan of this idea that you just flush, quote unquote, away bad games. Like you have to own everything, right? And you can't be dismissive of losses when you're never dismissive of wins, right? You have to assess them for what they are. But I will say, in the context of that Canucks California road trip, and then coming home having the lousy game on Saturday, especially the third period, but to come back tonight and have this kind of game, and I agree, like, it could have been more than 3-1, but it also might have been closer. Lankanen still made a couple of great saves at the end, but they were so much better tonight than they were Saturday. And I think for them, they'll now see it as kind of just a continuation of what they started to build on that California trip. And I was thinking about this, and it was part of a theme in my story that I just filed for sportsnet.ca. You know, we follow them so closely every day, every practice, every game. And I think we at times don't see the forest for the trees, which I wouldn't put into writing because that's a cliche.
Another cliche, yes.
That's a cliche.
A cliche that's been used far more the past like 5 or 6 years. It's kind of reemerged, I would say.
Are you saying a lot on radio? You're kind of an influencer.
Yeah, I've tried to.
As
not
good
say
looking
as
you are, and the way you sound on radio. So
these compliments are too much, but but yeah, sorry. Good call.
So forest for the trees. So you know, last game, you know, it was terrible, and we all noted that. And I followed it up yesterday. I talked to JT Miller, who talked about his own substandard game and how, you know, he's been not as physical as he'd like to be for reasons, which we know have something to do with whatever medical issue kept him out of the preseason. But they win this game, and they're 8-3-3. We haven't seen Thatcher Demko play a minute. Their leading goal scorer is now out. Their two alpha forwards, Pedersen and Miller, have each had issues. They've been incorporating some games as many as 9 players new to the team from last year, and those guys all have different degrees of success and ratio of their integration to this new team. Did I say ratio? I meant the rate, like how quickly they
assemble. We knew what you meant.
How quickly they assemble. You know, I'm a writer. And yet, all that, here they are tied for 6th in points percentage in the National Hockey League. And Miller told me after, you know, that's the exciting thing in all this, is that they haven't been 100% for very many of these games, and yet they are where they are. So start to think about what they might become. Dakota Joshua, of course, important player who's missed the whole season so far. You think about what they are capable of. And he also said that's why, you know, as hard as we are, they're hard on themselves. Because he says, Miller, they know what they can be, and they don't accept not being as good as that. And so, you know, we're only 14 games in. That's what, not slightly more than 1/6 of the season. So there's an eternity to go.
Yeah.
You know, to whatever is going to happen in the spring. But overall, they've managed these 14 games pretty well, considering what they've faced, who they've been missing, who hasn't played well, and I think that the next 14 games, and I'm not going to say they're going to be 8-3-3 through every 14 game segment, but they are moving in the right direction. And, you know, I don't think that the next 14 games will be as topsy-turvy as these ones have been for them. Mind you, the schedule gets harder eventually. You know, the pace of their games has been in their favor, and the travel and all that stuff. But it's been pretty good so far.
They're on pace for 111 points.
So they're going to beat last year by 2.
That's their pace. We'll see. That, you know, just facts only.
Listen, I'd be surprised if they're not a 100-point team.
Oh, yeah. They should be a 100-point team. Yeah, for sure.
You know, are they going to be more than 109 points? I don't know. But they should be a better team. You don't necessarily have to have more than 109 points to be a better team. And one other thing, you probably want to end the show now.
No, right? Bick's got something. Well, we're good. Because you showed up later, too. Not saying you showed up later, but when we show up around 15, we'll push it to 30. You know what I mean?
We would always prioritize talking to you and getting out on time.
Exactly. Okay. Like, we like to have at least 10 to 15 minutes with you, right?
Yeah.
And if you show up later, which we'll happily have you later in the show. It's just, you know.
And the people ask, nay, demand that you be here for 15 minutes.
Because I know Sat likes to get home to his cucumber face scrub, you know, each night. And he likes to get there, you know,
make
by
my chamomile tea.
Of course,
he
only gets home as fast as I drive him.
Right, so. Which is honestly, I mean, you know,
the cucumbers are in the fridge; they're already
in water.
Yeah.
Is he prepping the sleep mask on the way home too?
Oh yeah, yeah, totally.
We laugh, but these are all good practices.
Yeah. I forget, what were we talking about before that?
111 points.
Oh, I was going to share one thing that I gleaned post game that I thought was really interesting. And naturally, I used it in my story. I talked to Jake DeBrusque. Talked to him a little bit about Petey. Didn't use that. And by the way, I'm going to try and say Pettersson now, or Elias. I'm going to stop calling him Petey.
Really? Is that like just...
I don't know. I just feel like he's not a little kid
calling
anymore.
Him Petey, right?
Yeah. But I'm still going to call
him. He's now in his late 20s.
26, yeah, his birthday. Yeah. I didn't even know that till I went in the dressing room. DeBrusque actually mentioned it to me. But I'm still calling Hughes Huggy. I don't know why. It's just how I am.
Deal with it.
Actually, I've never called Hughes Huggy to his
face. I was
going to
say,
I never even heard you say
Huggy with us.
No, I say Quinn. He's such a nice guy. Anyways, so DeBrusque was talking about, and again, it was this theme about some of the challenges they faced in these 14 games. And he said, you know, adversity usually makes a team stronger, which is, you know, a thing we were aware of. But he said, you know, if you have it's hard to have a perfect season, but we had pretty much a perfect season in Boston a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Remember the
119 or 120? No, it was in 2022, 23.
Yeah, was it 130 points?
Yeah, it was. It was in the 130s. Yeah. 65 wins, 131 or something.
I'll bring it up here in a second.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But go on, yeah.
And he said, you know, we had a few injuries along the way, but everything was smooth sailing. But the playoffs are entirely about adversity. And he didn't say, and then we got thrown out in the first round, which they did. Did they get the first round or second?
They lost in the first round.
To Florida, right?
Florida, they lost against. They were up 3-0 against the Panthers,
too. Florida went on to the Cup final. Anyways, he said, you know, the playoffs are entirely about adversity. So the more of those building blocks you can pick up along the way, the more prepared you're going to be when you get there. And I'm paraphrasing here a little bit. But I thought it was a really interesting observation for a guy who came from that team. And, you know, because he's from the West, he's well aware of all the things the Canucks have been through and how some of the lows have been in this market. But he also knows about adversity and he feels like what the team has been able to do is going to bode well for what it's going to try and do later in the season.
Jonathan Lekkermäki makes his debut, and Rick Tocchet had some praise for him as well, and certainly didn't look out of place for his debut.
No, and you know, great for Tocchet, not just to put him in the lineup, but put him on the top unit power play. To have him out late in the game, see maybe he can get an empty net goal and then he's underway in the NHL as a scorer.
But it wasn't a token, hey, just go out to get a goal. He did good things defensively to earn the opportunity.
Yes, but I think in Tocchet's mind, maybe it's reward for the first 58 minutes, but I think he's trying to help a young guy get on an NHL score sheet and maybe ease some of the pressure that will build if he goes a few games without scoring. So they definitely were putting him in a position to succeed, which is really important because I've seen so often guys who come up and you put them in an entirely different type of situation in the NHL than what they're accustomed to, and you think that they're just going to transition and still be good. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very good in the coaching staff. He looks like he's such, to me, Lekkermäki, such a smart player. And a more well-rounded player than what those of us who didn't watch him closely last year but were aware of his accomplishments thought he was. I thought he was just pure shooter, pure goal scorer. And ultimately, I think, you know, that's going to have to be his ticket in the NHL. But he seems to be smart with the puck, and certainly, as Miller said, makes some subtle plays beyond just shooting it. And he did have a couple of chances, the one on a power play early, the one-timer that I don't know if he got all of it, but you know, Vladar made a good save. And so I think it was a positive debut. He still just has so much growing to do, literally and figuratively. I mean, we saw that Elias Pettersson, when he came into the NHL, was a very slight player as well, and was really sensitive about his weight, and he's gotten stronger. But 6 years later, that's still something that he works at in the off season to make himself stronger. Lekkerimäki's at the far end of that spectrum, where he's just starting to understand what it's going to take to play professionally at this level. So I'm not sure that he's physically ready for this. In fact, I'd go out on a limb and say right now he's not, like, not to be an everyday player, but Brock Besser is out. They need somebody who can play in an offensive role, and I think this is terrific timing for them to let him have a sense of what this environment is going to be like, probably motivate him even further, although the way he started in the American Hockey League, it doesn't seem like he lacks any motivation. And, you know, it's a positive start. It's been kind of quietly one of the best stories about this organization so far, is what they appear to be harvesting through their development pipeline. Mm-hmm. You know, that Ratu and Baines, Brännström is not part of their, you know, he kind of jetted in, but he's come up from the minors, and we see what he's doing now. And even, you know, even talking to a couple of people, you know, the season that EP2, the other Pettersson, is having has been very positive. Sasson had a great camp. Maybe at some point we see him get an NHL game this year. It's been a positive story for this team, and now Lekkerimäki is the latest part of that story.
I like that you said EP2, because you said you weren't going to say PD anymore. So it can't be DPD, obviously. Yeah. So EP2.
No,
EP2 is good. EP2.
I've never really liked DPD, to tell you the truth. I think EP2 has better ring to it.
Sounds a little Star Wars-y, though.
Yeah.
R2-D2. Yeah,
you got something against George Lucas?
No. Vic's not a big fan of that.
So
really?
I'm not. Sorry. Let me rephrase. I'm a fan of Star Wars.
Right.
But a lot of them thereafter feel like they're following the same story.
He wants more originality, essentially, is what he's saying.
I'll wait till Han Solo comes back from the dead.
Then you'll see how it happens. Ian, well, that brings us to the end of the show. Fantastic stuff, as always. I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca. And like you mentioned, a little bit on Elias Pettersson and how well he played tonight. So I look forward to reading that and also what fans have in store. But great stuff, as always. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for extending the show for my behalf. I appreciate it. Yeah. Sorry I can't get over here sooner.
Hey,
I don't run as quickly as I used to.
Listen,
the fact that you apologize means the world.
The fact that you show up is actually the best part of it to begin with. Great stuff as always. He's Bick Nizar. You can listen to him tomorrow on The People Show. A special thanks to Josh Ellie Wolf, Elon Shark back at the studio. Same with Fast Eddie Gregory. I'm Satyar Shah back at Canuck Central tomorrow, 4 to 6. We have Overrated, Underrated coming up tomorrow. Plus, Kevin Woodley joins us. And we'll preview Bo Horvat coming back to town with the New York Islanders on Thursday. Thanks for listening to the Canuck Central Postgame Show, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.